Tag, audience, and welcome to another episode of Anime Was Not a Mistake Presents Good Movie Podcast.
Yes.
I'm one of your hosts, Jonathan Kwiatkowski, ready to Bertle Breck some hearts. Joined as always by my co-hosts in my Caucasian chalk circle, it's
Dan Ryan, celebrating St. Patrick's Day.
In the only way we know how.
Well, not at the moment, but with some, you know, clover-shaped donuts that were already gone by the time I arrived here.
I mean, when we get to this episode, you'll have nothing but the crumbs if you're lucky.
That's what I assume, yeah.
Yeah, so for good movie, you know, to keep on theme with me, as I've said to you and our listeners, most of my picks, if not all of them, are based in some way around theater.
Mm-hmm.
And this one that we're watching today, the classique, in some regards, some don't like this movie, I personally do, is the Little Lars von Trier joint by the name of Dogville from 2003.
Mm-hmm.
This movie is basically the origin of the Dark Jonathan arc.
It is.
It's
yeah.
why I refuse to trust people at my core.
Mm-hmm.
It's no matter how much I give to Dan, how much joy I put into this world, it will always in some way come back to bite me in the ass.
Exactly.
Like a wild dog.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Ryan is loosely familiar with this, partly by knowing me and partly because he walked in on the ending one day.
Yes.
I don't know if he vaguely recalls that ending or what comes up to that ending, but for a long time before Good Movie Podcast was even a thing,
mm-hmm.
this was on Dan's radar.
Yes.
As something that I enjoy for some apparent reason. So, any initial thoughts on Dogville? Things to expect? Things to remember? Things to recall?
well, a Dogville, not to be confused with Lords of Dogtown, the skateboard epic from the early 2000s.
Yeah, a different Good Movie Podcast episode, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm only familiar with this through you. Again, I did walk in on the ending of it.
Mm-hmm.
You explained some of the context there, but obviously that must have been like the last 15 minutes,
yeah.
So I don't think I got any of the build-up to it,
mm-hmm.
Except that some people had been very mean to Nicole Kidman.
Mm-hmm.
And
we can't take that on this podcast.
We can't take that.
They will be punished.
They will get their comeuppance.
Yeah.
And that's mostly where my familiarity begins and ends with it. I have not looked into it because I assumed we would be dabbling in it.
Have you seen any other Lars von Trier movies? Being, I mean, the most recent one is The House That Jack Built. We have Melancholia, Antichrist.
I believe I saw Antichrist a while back.
Yeah.
And I think I've seen part of Melancholia. I know the gist of what happens in that movie.
Melancholia might be a film that I'll never want to return to again because it got depression so well that I just don't want to.
Yeah.
I don't want to go back to that place I had in my heart.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, Lars von Trier, very controversial. You can Google that. We have to learn to separate the art from the artist. I'm not taking any sides here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just here for the artistic medium that is presented before me this episode. So,
yes.
Yeah, I'm not championing anyone who is a toxic person and yet still gets a lot of these high-grade celebs to work with him.
Consistently. Was he the one who did Nymphomania?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
Nymphomaniac, Volume 1 and Volume 2.
Because, like, the poster with all the people in the celebrity
having their
Hollywood
orgasm
squares.
Faces, yeah.
Yeah.
It's very similar.
Similar to this.
As you could see, not released stateside, that is the German Blu-ray, but has the American dub on it. Fitting, as this work is inspired by the works of Bertolt Brecht, another notable toxic creator who made fabulous art that we have to separate the art from the artist from.
Mm-hmm.
So there are many layers here. Before we begin with some light drawing board knowledge, that's right, they're here as well today,
mm-hmm.
In a scant form, I had Dan listen to a song in German, probably one of the most famous German songs besides Mac the Knife to come out of this century of music. In both its German and original, I mean, original German and then native English for us, so we can understand what's going on. Care to explain your feelings on the song, Dan? A little bit of music therapy.
Okay.
Mm.
We have covered this bass before, but obviously you and I react to music very differently.
Yes.
I tried my best to get something from it.
Yeah.
I
figured.
But, the main points that I gathered were that the song revolved around a lady, who runs some sort of establishment and or works at an establishment in this, harbor town.
Yeah.
Is frequently, you know, maybe misused or insulted by the people in the community.
Yes.
Which is kind of rounded out by this black freighter, which might be a pirate ship, which might be sailors, it might be something else. coming into town. You know, and when the sailors arrive, that's presumably when things get worse for her. And at the end of the song, she is the one on the Black Freighter, I think laying siege to the town, mm-hmm. it says something to that mm-hmm. effect.
Yeah.
And then disappears finally from it.
Yes. Your origin story of Kenilworth, if I recall. Yes. That's how you came and left and came back again, returned as the Pirate King. Very close, you know, to the original intent of the song. It is a song about female rage.
Mm-hmm.
This is Jenny from Brecht's opera, Die Groschenhopper, or the Threepenny Opera.
Mm-hmm.
And Jenny is a prostitute. And she is mistreated by all of the men around her.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually she has a part in, like, getting the upper hand on this guy, Mac the Knife, who has treated her badly and is a very bad criminal on the scene, has killed multiple people, raped, you know, had sex with minors, kind of the worst guy you can meet.
Mm-hmm.
And she eventually says, you know, enough's enough. And as she daydreams that she would have a better life as this kind of pirate queen waiting for her ship to come in, she reports him to the cops in lieu of, like, forgetting their past relationship and getting him caught and apprehended at once. So this is kind of bottling up all those feelings of, you know, you can only put Jonathan down so many times before Jonathan snaps, Stan.
Of course, and gets his day. As I'm learning.
You know, every dog has its day in Dogville. Yeah. But that's kind of what I wanted to set the mood for. We've got a woman at ends with the world and just how badly she can be mistreated by those around her. And it's veiled under Americana this time. So how can the American neighbor, you know, the peach cobbler on the windowsill, the American flag and spanglers and sparklers on 4th of July, kind of turn its head and bite the people that live here?
Okay, that tracks with what I had seen of it, what mm-hmm. you explained of it, everything you've teased about it.
Mm-hmm.
There's one phrase in particular that you keep teasing that you're going to destroy my anime figures.
Yes, we will.
You know,
you'll have to learn to lose to live again, Dan.
I'm gonna throw out one little bit of Dan
mm-hmm.
tidbit knowledge, little trivia fact, mm-hmm. little Snapple fact. For anyone familiar with Watchmen,
yes,
there is an accompanying comic within a comic inside that book called Tales of the Black Freighter.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if he was inspired by you know, if
could
the name
be.
Was...
Yeah.
It's not related to this. It's like a supernatural pirate story because mm-hmm. the, you know, it replaces the superhero medium. But I wonder, because, you know, Alan Moore's a pretty smart guy. It would not surprise me if he was referencing something like this.
Yeah, and this the Threepenny Opera is a cultural tentpole. It's in a lot of media, loosely, mm-hmm. especially here in Dogville. That's kind of the most prominent recent thing mm-hmm. that I can think of. But anyway, Drawing Board Coon is here today, but he is not here. It is just a spot on the floor labeled Drawing Board.
Oh my.
Decked out in stage tape and nothing more.
Okay.
So I will read extemporaneously from Drawing Board, just a little blurb of what to expect. So Dogville is a 2003 avant-garde drama film written, directed by Lars von Trier, and starring an ensemble cast led by Nicole Kidman, Lauren Bacall, Paul Bettany, Chloe Sevigny, Stellan Skarsgård, Udo Kier, Ben Gazzara, Patricia Clarkson, Harriet Anderson, and James Caan, with John Hurt narrating.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a star-studded cast. It is a parable that uses an extremely minimal stage-like set to tell the story. The story of Dogville is narrated by John Hurt, as I said, in 9 chapters and takes place on a stage with, just minimal white-painted outlines with labels on them. For example, it's the outlines of the gooseberry bush. We'll mm-hmm. say gooseberry bush, Dan.
Right.
And best you mind them. You better not touch those gooseberry bushes, Dan. While this form of staging is common in black box theaters, it has rarely been attempted on film before the Western musical Red Garters in 1954 and Vanya on 42nd Street in 1994 being notable exceptions where the staging was shown on film. The bare staging serves to focus on the audience's attention on the acting and storytelling and also reminds them of the film's artificiality, or perhaps elements of the film that they could take and use or experience in their own life. So it's bare bones, you're just watching acting.
Okay.
It's Our Town by Thornton Wilder.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yep. So bare staging, as such, it is heavily influenced by the theater of Bertolt Brecht. There are also similarities between the song Serabra Jenny, or Pirate Jenny, which we listen to, in Brecht and Kurt Weill's Die, Die Groschenhopper, the Threepenny Opera, and the story of Dogville. According to von Trier, the point of the film is that evil can arise anywhere as long as the situation is right. It is very hailed by many as an anti-American movie. So,
okay,
you know, we're getting a little against our own country today, which is fine. We don't live in a utopia.
I think that's
obvious.
Of course.
Yep. Dogville polarized critics upon its United States theatrical release, with Metacritic giving it a 60 score, mixed or average reviews, and the Rotten Tomatoes critics' consensus for it stating simply a challenging piece of experimental filmmaking. 70% of critics gave it a positive review, with an average score of 7 out of 10, based on 168 reviews. Many hailed it as innovative and powerful artistic statement, while others considered it to be emotionally detached or often misanthropic. In The Village Voice, Jay Haberman wrote, "For passion, originality, and sustained a chutzpah, this austere allegory of failed Christian charity and Old Testament payback is Von Trier's strongest movie, a masterpiece, in fact." Peter Travers of Rolling Stone gave the film 3.5 out of 4 stars, praising Kidman's performance and dubbing it a movie that never met a cliche it didn't stomp on.
Okay.
And the Los Angeles Times, on the other hand, Manola Dargis dismissed it as 3 hours of tedious experimentation. Roger Ebert gave it 2 out of 4 stars. Later, Dogville was named one of the greatest films of the decade in The Guardian, The List, and Paste. In 2016, it was ranked one of the 100 greatest motion pictures in a critics poll conducted by the BBC Culture System.
So it was reflected upon kind of differently. Yeah. Little boost there, probably.
Yeah, and partly choosing this as a selfish reason, I think more people should be talking about this movie. Mm-hmm. There is a lesser-known sequel that Kidman skipped out on, filmed in a similar way that I have not seen. But I just, you know, it's a really powerful movie that has stuck with me. And as part of the Dark Jonathan arc, part of my job is bringing Dan down for a change.
Yes. Yeah.
And who knows? Maybe you'll learn a little something. You'll learn how to defeat the Jonathans in your life. Maybe. By standing up to them.
Yeah. Finally stands up to you, not afraid of you anymore. Yeah.
Push you down into the canyon. Should have not messed with Big Dog, huh? But without further ado, I suppose, we've got a long trek ahead of us, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
I hope you brought your... I don't know what you'll bring to Dogville. There's already gooseberries there. You brought your anime figures and the clothes on your back.
Yeah.
Yep. And mind the dog. He bites.
Maybe a few more Shamrock Donuts.
Mm-hmm.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
Here we are once again, Good Movie Podcast, having just visited the pleasant town of Dogville. And Daniel Ryan, would you go back for a stay?
No, I would not.
Oh.
Sadly.
Interesting. Yeah. Why not, Daniel?
This is a very effective movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of the Dark Jonathan arc, I think based on the discussion we've had...
Yeah.
This is probably the darkest.
This was the effect that I wanted throughout the entire Dark Jonathan arc, which I think I'm only going to achieve one more time. I will say this outright. This is the darkest I'm going to go.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, so. it makes sense. And it would, you know, because, I mean, you had been teasing this for a while. But this is certainly a dark, dark movie.
Now, to be honest with you, you knew I can go this fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you expected that.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
All right. All right. I just don't want to, like, put you off, because I know some of our friends would be like, oh, Jonathan needs mental help.
Oh, no. No.
Okay.
No. I in fact, that was, you know, in terms of my...
Which I do, mind you.
Because, obviously, this is probably one of the darker things we've done on the podcast, but there are darker movies, and that's why I would ask, like, why, you know, why the German Blu-ray...
We'll cross that bridge. Yeah. We'll cross that bridge.
So that's... Yeah.
But... There are elements of this you can see as dark comedy, though, right?
Definitely.
For the sake of just the fucked upness of this film.
Yeah.
But did you enjoy it? Did you enjoy the trip for Dogville? Did you learn a little something about yourself and the American populace, maybe?
I definitely did enjoy it.
Yeah?
I mean, I would probably recommend it with some asterisks that you need to be in the right... headspace.
I think they could have cut an hour off this film and it would have been fine.
Yeah.
We could have cut some of the acts here, but I get why it's there in the first place.
Yes.
A lot does happen to poor Nicole Kidman.
Yes.
Who,
you know, we love her here and she does phenomenal job.
She does
stand out. So, yeah.
Yeah. But Dogville and its essentials.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Watch it if you get a chance. Shall we get into the plot?
Certainly.
9 chapters and a prologue, Dan. John Hurt narrates and does a great job at it, telling us everything that's going to occur. The prologue, which introduces to us to the town of Dogville and to the residents. Like many 19th century novels, this is filmed in the Bertolt Brecht style, where he would always have, like, something on the side of the stage telling us the exact actions of the scene that's going to happen and the exact location.
Mm-hmm.
So the audience knew immediately upon watching the scene what was going to entail.
Okay.
So it's a theatrical kind of thing. Want to let the audience know that they are aware that they're watching theater and they are an active participant in it.
Yes, and this one definitely has that feel to it, and, you know, maybe it could be jarring when you first start it, but then I would say that it just kind of, you melt into it like you would a theater production, and you stop thinking about it after a certain point.
So we get the minimal set design, introducing scenes with what exactly happens in them, breaking the fourth wall, modern humor, and spontaneous songs were some of, like, Brecht's elements. There are no songs here.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a musical.
Yeah, I was gonna say, yeah, I don't...
I know. God forbid Jonathan doesn't suggest a musical on Good Movie Podcast.
But... I don't remember any songs in this, but... Yeah.
That's why we listened to Pirate Jenny before.
Yes.
And you can get how I connected the themes there.
Definitely.
Right? It's a similar thing that's going on. Characters named after their values and position.
Mm-hmm.
So we get, like, the young Tom Edison. We get Grace, who's named after Grace.
Mm-hmm.
We get, like, a lot of characters there.
Yeah.
And that was another common Brechtian thing. Like, they name a character Virtue, and she's nothing but pure, but has the world thrust upon her.
Okay. Yeah.
Also, Brecht at times was kind of a huge asshat, just like Von Trier.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which we'll get to. There's some funny little shenanigans that went on filming this movie.
No, because, you know, that's one of the things, is that you're promising to provide some tea on this, because I'm interested to see what kind of discussion this was garnering. So.
As I said before, separating the art from the artist, Dogville is a small town in the Rocky Mountains in the good old USA. Labeled floor diagram, minimal props, and stage decorations, the town is seen from above.
Yes.
So what did you think of the staging? Was it effective? Did you get, like, the gist of it? Did you understand what they were trying to go for?
No, it's definitely effective. It feels like there's, like, nothing beyond it. It feels like it's, like, surrounded by a void. There's no escape. There's
did experience Jessica Chastain in the Jamie Lloyd dollhouse.
I did, so which was even less.
You knew exactly what was going on here.
Except the rotating chairs.
Yeah,
but
there was no wall reveal into the modern century, though.
No.
Yeah.
Not in this. But no, it's a good job of, like, making you feel closed off from everything.
So we get the introductory scene of the movie, seen from above, was generated by a computer from 165 individual shots. The ceiling of the filming studio was not tall enough to make one single shot of this ground layer.
Okay.
So every time we see an above layer, it's kind of edited on top of one another, which you can get in a second watch. These actors aren't really lining up. They're just shot individually. And things are going on.
Okay.
Just an interesting premise that I want to bring on. Main Street, called Elm Street, despite an elm never having grown there. It's Kenilworth, Dan. Dogville is Kenilworth.
It is.
We named it after the Taco Bell around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Chalupa Express.
Yeah, historically. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we meet our main hero, Tom Edison Jr., played by Paul Bettany, who Dan has a much...
Well,
you know, stronger connection with.
A stronger connection in that he was Vision in the Marvel
and
movies.
And she's basically you.
Yes, and that was a very uncomfortable fact throughout the film, because he is a writer who is not very good at writing, and he doesn't do a whole lot of writing until, you know, the worst possible circumstances that he himself has created.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those things where it's like, again, I don't know how this ventures into, like, criticism or anything else, because...
No, please, share your opinions. That's what I brought this for.
Again, like, you said early on that it was okay that I knew where this was ending
because
of the
song. It's Brechtian. I think it would have given you a shock if you didn't know, but you can definitely say that Dogville is not headed for a good end.
No, and that's...
From the beginning
of
this
film. That's
the
whole... Like, I tried to detach everything from that
aspect.
Which
you're supposed to do.
Like,
you're supposed to be like, what would I do in this situation if I was an American thrust upon myself, you know?
But I would say that Tom Edison Jr. does, like, telegraph himself as kind of a scumbag right from the start, because he's
definitely...
he's part of this town, but he sees himself as, like, above it.
Well, clearly. Don't you do the same of Kenilworth?
I do not. I keep to myself.
I don't think you're a man of the earth and salt that came from the Kenilworth mines.
Well, I am not. Well, yeah. Our silver mine's been shut down for about 50 years now.
I mean, there's
but
a lot of Dan Ryan callouts that I gave him a good gander, Doran.
There are, yeah.
That he'll have to address his sins on the podcast.
But it's kind of in that way. It's if this guy is considered like the ringleader, then it you know it's coming that this is not going to end well. Yeah. So
Tom Edison Jr. lives with his father, Tom Edison Sr. He is a writer, Tom Edison Jr., and it's a personal attack on Dan Ryan, the dark Jonathan Ark I have written here.
Yes,
exactly. Writes a lot, but keeps his work confined to his desk drawers and his mind.
Yes.
Yeah, Dan, maybe if you were to put a pen to paper.
Well, that's...
Or maybe read something that might inspire you.
That's neither here nor there.
This is it! This is the dark Jonathan Ark calling out Dan Ryan's insecurities.
This is kind of
like it a feeling.
This is a targeted attack.
Paul Bettany didn't want to play Tom Edison because they were shooting it in Sweden. Then his friend Stellan Skarsgård told him that Lars von Trier shoots were so funny to be a part of that you'll miss something extraordinary if you turn down the part. After shooting half the movie, Bettany asked Skarsgård when the fun would start, to which Skarsgård replied, "I lied." I did it because he is amazing to work with, and you wouldn't be able to see that before you were actually here yourself. I wanted to give you a chance, and you wouldn't have shown up if I had been frank with you. Mm-hmm. Giving us our first clue that maybe Lars von Trier is not really the best friend to work with in this scenario.
Yeah.
You'll give some good acting. I mean, the acting's flawless in this.
It is.
They're all doing their best to portray the worst in humanity.
And again, but I... literally, you know that I'm not in the film world deep. I do not know what the specific controversies with Lars von Trier are.
Which you'll research after the podcast.
Yeah, so
but there are quite a few. I said I would share with Dan a certain Kirsten Dunst look.
So, yeah, like I will need to research that on my own time, but if I seem a little naive, it's because I know that he has like a reputation, but I don't know for what.
We'll get to more kooky Lars von Trier moments.
Of course.
So Bettany, like many actors that work with Trier, did not like him one bit when filming this.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "You're absolutely his puppet." Despite being a fan of von Trier's movies in general, Bettany has never watched this movie and has no intention in doing so.
I could see it. I see it.
But I think he gives a really good turn.
He does.
At playing the scumbag. Like, all I knew him from was as Vision and Jarvis, which I got right. That's right, Marvel audiences. I knew something about him.
I want to say he's in the Da Vinci Code as the bad guy.
But I'm not focusing on him in the Da Vinci Code.
No. But that was the thing, is that Paul Bettany... unironically, before, as we were talking about the thing with the Vision, from his point of view, his career was over by, like, right before he got that call to play the Vision, you know, beyond just the voice of Jarvis. He was, like, his agent had basically given up on him, you know, so he was like, my acting career is done. So, which is surprising seeing performances like this, because he probably deserved more of a shot.
Well, he gives me, like, theater actor energy.
He does, yeah.
So we meet some other residents of the town, including Olivia, taking care of her handicapped daughter, wheelchair-bound daughter, June. Tom is obsessed with moral rearmament.
Yes.
Which I dubbed as Dan Ryan's Pokemon conversation talks.
Yes, I'm trying to get
people.
Yeah, trying to get people what I'm doing or what Tom is doing.
Well, what both of you are doing to me
every
weekend. Yes,
Tom likes to.
All I'll say is TOMDAN. Same
exactly.
Number of letters.
Yeah.
Same person.
Tom is, I guess, just because of the period of time that this is set in, like America, he is convinced that the moral fiber of America is failing.
He's given like modern day Quaker.
Yes, and he is like, you know, in order to cope with the fact that he is not writing, because, to set the stage,
yeah, Please do.
His father is a retired doctor who gets, like, a retirement check every so often,
and
or
who's
a pension
been,
check.
Who we assume is, like, bent on his own pills and prescriptions.
I would assume that, too. Yeah. And so that allows Tom to live with his father comfortably.
And not have to do any kind of sort of job.
So
just observe.
He has declared himself a writer, but in lieu of not being able to write, he drifts around the town.
This
and
is going to keep Dan Ryan up.
It will. Yeah. Preoccupies himself with, like, making up things to do. And one of the things that he has made up, you know, as a task are these moral rearmament seminars where he just gathers the town in their defunct, like, mission
church,
hall.
Yeah.
And, you know, he gives them a speech about
being a better human being.
Very, yeah, being a better human being without any religious connotation. Because
and no facts sourced or whatever.
No,
just extemporaneously talking off the cuff.
A lot of hot air. Yeah. It's, I think there's implications
Dan
that
Dan explained to me why X and Y were good.
He comes up with them, like, the night before, like, the speeches that he's going to give, and then that's...
Dan Ryan's sweating at that side of the table.
I am. I'm sweating bullets,
I'm
but...
I'm glad.
The so that's what he's doing here, and that's why he does come off as, like, a douche in this early part, because he's like, I'm going to gather the townspeople to talk down to them for a little bit, even though he's no better. So
we also meet Moses, an old dog who is portrayed here by a drawing.
Yes.
So Bandit would be welcome here.
Yes.
Would have to be a bigger drawing, though.
Got his soup bone. Yeah.
Yeah. And what's there to steal in Dogville?
Just
nothing left but our common sense. We meet some of the townsfolk, including Ma Ginger, Lauren Bacall, attending to her gooseberry bushes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I'll ho as I darn please, Daniel Ryan.
Yes.
What an icon. Lauren Bacall, not the last time we'll see her in the Good Movie Podcast. I love her so much.
No, I would assume not.
She was working up to the end. She is the Witch of the Waste from our Howl's Moving Castle episode. Mm-hmm. I love Lauren Bacall. I just love her voice. She's Jessica Rabbit's speaking voice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all that going
on. I think we're probably going to get...
No, that's Turner as Jessica Rabbit's speaking voice.
Oh, Kathleen Turner.
Kathleen Turner, sorry. But close enough. They both have that smoky voice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ben in his car in the freight industry.
Yeah, he has a truck. He's obsessed with the freight industry.
Oh,
he talks about it.
That's a Dan Ryan character if I ever saw one before.
He's very pathetic, and he just kind of repeats... Like, clearly his only job is that he brings...
He exports and imports. He brings things to the town so they can eat, because I asked, how do they get groceries?
Yeah.
It has to be through Ben.
Yeah.
And then he exports the other things and says it's part of the freight industry, but every month or so he goes to the neighborhood bordello, or the neighboring town bordello, and fucks someone.
Yeah, and it's just like that's clearly he's just paid to drive his truck back and forth, and he pretends like, oh yeah, no, the freight and commerce industry in this country,
and
is
that's
blah,
giving
blah, blah,
like Dan Ryan like Star Wars is good, One Piece is good, like watch that, and I'm like,
he's coping, yeah.
So 7 o'clock, the neighborhood, like, I wouldn't say Christian, we don't know what they believe in. I mean, it's giving Americana Christian energy.
Well, with Martha,
yes.
The important thing is that. The town is very traditional, but they don't have a past... Like, at the moment, they don't have a preacher. So Martha is tending to
and
the...
And she's that one actress who's in everything.
Oh,
she's
the Men
wife
in Black.
In Men in Black. She's in all the Lars von Trier's movies.
Yeah, she's...
I can never remember her name.
I cannot either,
but she... Like, you know her face when you see her.
Yeah.
Like, she's that much of an icon.
And
I'll have to look up the name.
She's, you know, so it's not called a church, it's called a mission hall, she is just tending to the building until that, you know, until they can get a preacher to work there permanently, and because of, like, I would assume gender roles and everything else, she's like, I can't even play the organ here, because that's, like, sacrosanct for the preacher to do, so I'm not even gonna, we can't play music officially.
She's religiously withdrawn, she's my little Saint Maud.
But there's no talk about religion beyond that.
Well,
so,
they like to pretend they're religious.
Yes, but they're clearly not.
So he avoids. Well, Tom avoids playing checkers with his dumb engineer friend Bill. That's Barry Dan Ryan coming over every Sunday.
Yeah, we're playing Fire Emblem.
It depends on who's the dumb one, like, of the week of what we bring to the podcast. So we can both be Bill in this scenario. The town is all Jonathan and Dance.
And again, there's a thing with, like, gender roles where. Like, Bill is clearly kind of dumb, and
but his sister, Chloe Sevigny,
is smart.
Who I love Chloe Sevigny.
Me too.
Whenever I'm going to bring American Horror Story to the podcast, she'll be there.
Yeah.
She's a featured actor. She hates animals. She hates children.
I think I was first exposed to her, again, on Big Love.
That's odd to me, because she's been around for a while, and she's always playing, like, the same character, like, the town seductress.
Yeah, well, since then, I've seen her in a lot more stuff, and okay. In going back in other movies and everything. But that's
very
Jonathan.
Sister. It's like, oh, Dan, well, you're here again. Where did you expect Dan to be? Yeah. Right?
And she has, like, a whole thing where just any day now, her boyfriend from the city is going to call and say,
from,
you got
a job. California, like, across the country.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, he got a job,
Boulder,
and I'm going to move
Boulder.
Out there.
Goodbye, Boulder City. La La Land.
Exactly.
We'll get there.
We're inching closer
a connection.
To it.
I'd love you to bring La La Land again and me to fucking harpoon that shit.
Yeah, I think we'll have really time has passed.
Really kill Dan
Ryan. Well,
it has been years.
It has been years.
We can watch
it
again
on the podcast.
First episode of Nightcaps of the Theater.
So it would be, we would be looking at it under fresher eyes.
I'd love to. I have the 4K ready for you.
Because famously, I was affected by that movie, and Jonathan,
he cried a tear, and I laughed a laugh.
Jonathan's old Grinch heart was unable to even feel a thing about it. So,
well, thanks to this movie, you know why now.
Well, yeah, but
it's add a little bit more to the Jonathan backstory.
But yeah, so that's the deal with them, is like the you know. Chloe Sevigny is
Chloe Sevigny.
Sevigny.
Not Sevigny. It's not French.
Is
you dumb shit.
Had previously been the object of everyone's affections until Grace shows up. Yeah. So everyone who would be looking at her lustfully, that had kind of been what she dealt with previously, but now Nicole Kidman rolls up. And
not yet. But Tom is sitting at the bench, the old lady's bench, just past the gooseberry bushes, and thinking about his life. And I'm like, that's a very Dan Ryan, Jonathan Kwiatkowski during the week introspective. I'm gonna sit down and imagine myself giving great speeches to the American masses, and becoming a politician almost. I could see both of us being politicians in some regards.
It would
be very Dead Zone of us, like
it would
shoot Jonathan before he uses the baby to block a bullet. But yeah, I could see both of us going down that path in a different lifestyle. But it's in the distance. You could just feel an unsettling quality of these residents just about to bubble over.
Yes.
And that's why I chose it. Like, it's Americana gone awry.
Yeah.
It's something we've both experienced in our lives. We love America. We love living. Listen, New Jersey's separate. Alex Garland's fucking Civil War is coming out. I'm sure we'll watch that, and it'll be great. But I think New Jersey is a separate place, and I see the country like bubbling around us.
Yeah, I don't think about anything outside New Jersey. I don't think. I think there's a thing with people in New Jersey. We're not just here.
Yeah.
So
you can't judge us. The Commonwealth. of New Jersey. But Americana on edge. So after the prologue, we've arrived at chapter one, Dan, in which Tom hears gunfire and meets Grace.
And okay, there's another little cope, not hope thing here where frequently there is like a banging noise in the distance, which is...
It's the pistons driving up the dirt.
Which the townspeople, via rumor, have convinced themselves is like a new construction project for like a prison or something like that that might maybe... I would assume the hope is that it would create jobs, but we never get confirmation of it. It's just like there's something
in the distance, something unknown.
Yeah.
Another Brechtian thing. Like you hear the set. Well, that's Chekhov. It's the sound of a string snapping. You don't know what it is, but it's supposed to signify something. It's very theatrical, Dan.
But this night, distinct from that, there are gunshots that ring out.
Yeah, so Tom is so smart, he beats his dullard friend too quickly and wanders down Elm Street. All the Dogville residents going about their plain routines. Suddenly, Tom hears gunshots coming up the valley below. Some excitement. Tom has all the worldly ideas for himself, but no action.
Yes.
Dan Ryan.
Yes.
Care to comment?
Jonathan, one of these days I could bring something.
What are you
going
to do? Bring me to the moon?
You're going to knock me
to the moon, Alice?
I could bring something.
Yeah,
I could,
please do.
Probably via Sinister Six.
Yeah.
I am like,
you're
going to
call me out?
I
don't think so, Dan Ryan. You don't have the belly for it.
You don't got the stomach for it.
You don't, Dan Ryan. So, you could never. Remember who's in charge here.
But.
You would never touch my gooseberry bush.
But this is when, out from the darkness, Nicole Kidman wanders into town.
Night falls and a woman wanders through Elm Street. This is Grace, Nicole Kidman. So Lars von Trier revealed in a November 2014 interview he wrote the screenplay on a 12-day drug binge.
That makes sense.
Okay. Yeah. Lars von Trier wrote the role of Grace with Nicole Kidman in mind. Before meeting her, Trier read an interview with her that she expressed her desire to work with him, and he subsequently wrote this movie for her. Nicole Kidman reportedly vowed she would never work with the writer and director Lars von Trier again after the completion of this movie.
Jesus.
Kidman later turned down the lead in Antichrist, 2009, but in late 2010 revealed that she and Trier were still in touch, and in 2012 she was cast in Nymphomaniac Volume 1, 2013, but left the production due to scheduling conflicts. Writer and director Lars von Trier would allegedly sometimes try to strip and direct scenes naked.
Just because?
In order to provoke and agitate the cast.
That's one way to do that.
Sure. It was rumored he stripped naked in front of Nicole Kidman. When asked about it during an interview with The Guardian, all he said was, "It sounds likely."
Okay, maybe, but he doesn't remember. I don't know.
But Nicole was ready to come back and do more films with me, so it can't have been shocking to her that much.
All right, I'm not...
Damn, what if I stripped naked and we did this podcast?
What, the forced method acting on the podcast?
Yeah.
Would I sign up for more projects? I don't know.
Hmm.
I can't say. And then I ask you and you're like, what?
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Did I do that?
I never did that. Yeah, it was in a fugue state.
Pull out a Steve Urkel? Did I do that? Mm-hmm. Who knows?
Moses the dog barks at Grace alerting Tom. Grace trying to escape to the mountains, but it's too dangerous. Tom warns her, only safe way is back the way she came, towards Georgetown. A car approaches, and Grace begs Tom to help her. He tells her to hide in the abandoned silver mine, clear gangsters looking for Grace. The men leave, and Grace is convinced to stay in Dogville by Tom. And then we get a genuine relationship on Something to be Soured later on.
Oh, well, and also, while the gangsters are surveying the town, Tom is handed that card out of the window because there's like shades on the backseat of this car window. This is clearly like the boss.
Yes.
And he is handed a card with a phone number on it.
Pizza Hut phone number.
You know, which Tom takes, you know, call us if you see her anywhere, you know, and that's kind of left ambiguous for a little bit.
Yeah. So there's a threat looming over and an option for Tom throughout this. He has a whole escape.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to hear your analysis of Tom throughout the movie. Like, when does he turn, if he turns? Was he always bad? Was he good at some points, Dan?
No, I would argue he was always bad.
Okay.
I would argue that...
Men are trash. I love that.
Like, if you were to stop watching this film at any point, then there could be a different series of fucked up things that Tom is probably in the middle of. I would argue in this stretch he is bored and he's using a person to not feel bored anymore.
Yeah,
and that's already
trying to add the material for the novel he won't write.
Like, that's not, you know, illegal yet, that's not evil yet, but it's like, you know, he is so fucking unhappy that he's going to like, ooh, I can, this is an exciting situation. Mm-hmm. Like, because I think it even says when he hears the gunshots, he's excited. He's like, oh shit, there's going to be a gunfight.
Something's going
here.
On different in the town. I love
and
that.
And that's, yeah. So. Yeah.
The next day, Tom gives another one of his Pokemon speeches to the townsfolk.
He does.
We get Chloe Sevigny going, fucking again, my God.
But today he has an example.
Yeah, you've done it again, you idiot.
Yeah.
You can't get another character parallel between you and me. Me as Chloe Sevigny and you as Paul Bettany in this movie.
It's
the genuine energy this movie provides.
Yeah, it is. This is a dark reflection upon us.
I would be there.
Yeah. So.
Are you some kind of philosopher, Dan? Well, no.
No.
Not really. I've read a book or two, but he hasn't. He hasn't read any books.
But I've watched movies by people who have read books, so I have that. But
yeah.
So today he's given the speech, but he has a living example of, what's the word he keeps using?
Well,
receiving.
Yeah, he tries to suggest, would we help anyone if they needed it?
Yeah.
And the town is like, yes, of course, but then he's like, let's illustrate my point. I have someone here who needs help. So Grace will be some sort of social experiment. The town is uncertain of hiding a fugitive in the town. The old biddy's excuse, like, oh, we're old, I don't know if we can take care of her, she's a stranger,
mm-hmm.
we've lasted this long, we know each other, we depend on our fellow man. I don't know if it's a welcome thing. how can we trust her? And even Grace is unsure at this point.
Yeah. And Grace is very much like, these people have no reason to trust me. I'm not going to force them to, you know. So she puts herself down frequently throughout this whole process.
Mm-hmm. But we can offer a 2-week trial period, more than most people would have done in the same position. And then we get the tenet of Christian hospitality.
Yes.
You know, taking in your fellow man, despite this. And then I was like, ooh, this is going to be a little sour on people.
And that was not a joke. It is a literal 2-week trial period where if she cannot win, like, their
the,
hearts
the
and minds.
The praise of everyone in town.
Yeah. And we mean everyone, like, yeah,
all 15 adult members of town.
Then she will have to leave.
Then we meet Chuck, played by Stellan Skarsgård of Mamma Mia fame.
Mm-hmm.
And Vera Patricia Clarkson, who is an iconic actress, deserves that Academy Award. There's 7 kids and loveless marriage. We see the Hensons, who make their livelihood off of grinding off cheap glass to make it appear better. I was like, that's very Brechtian. Like,
yeah.
We're taking shit that from the garbage and making it appear new.
Yeah, and it's treated like, because it is their livelihood, and it's treated like, you know, from the outside, it looks pretty bad, but, like, this is what they do to survive. They trim glass that they find in the trash, and that's it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Jack McKay, who is going blind, obviously, but doesn't want the world to know about him. Ben, who was a truck driver, is a drunk and frequents the whorehouses in town, as we said previously. Gloria, who owns an expensive store, her real expensive 7 Precious Moments figurines.
Yes, and then another thing with Gloria's store being so expensive is that she knows that the other people in town can barely afford to get by, but she keeps her business running the way she does, you know, so that she can kind of, you know, probably remain a little bit better than them, is the vibe I would get from that. So she definitely overcharges her fellow Dogville residences.
Yeah, and then to add politics into it, Paul Bettany's like, no one really votes in town anymore, because there's like a voting...
No, but that's
vote, yeah.
There's, because they added a poll tax or something. Yeah. They were like, you know, we used to
pay a whole day's wages to vote, so no one really.
Yeah, which is a thing that happens and disenfranchises people still to this day.
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't know what poll tax, like, how prominent, but it's definitely, there are inconveniences put in, but it's really just to signify how shut off this town is. It's like, we don't even consider ourselves part of the democratic process anymore at this point. So,
and then, you know, Grace pulling the best of Jonathan out of her. She's touring the town. She's seen these Precious Moment figurines. And for a second, a different light descends upon the town.
Yeah, you saw those amiibos.
Yeah.
The lighting changed.
I saw those Peach Pit and Dark Pit amiibos, and I said, I have to stay here, even though everyone in the town is looking at her. Well, all eyes are literally on her.
Again, one of many synchronicities that we do not plan. Mm. I sent you a picture.
You did.
The retail establishments are stocking more amiibos than
we have
ever seen.
I told Dan, remember the dark times when no amiibos. I was very, very Lorne Bacall of myself.
The nets were coming up empty. We had to fight.
We had a Pit amiibo in our hands and we wasted it.
And now they're just, the shelves are overflowing with every amiibo ever made. It's just, what a time. Yeah.
So she's keeping an eye out on you, or everyone's keeping an eye on you. 2 weeks to convince them to save Grace's life through a game of physical labor. Yeah, that doesn't seem like a good idea to me.
No.
I mean, I would do physical labor, but at a point, I'd be like, I just have to go over that mountain, honey, and strike it out on my own.
Well, yeah, Grace is right to call it out, and Tom even has trouble dodging it, because she's like, oh, this seems like so I'm going to work for everyone for 2 weeks. Like, this is making, like, a game out of my life. And Tom's like, well, it's more like a, you know, it's more like an exchange, trust for trust. Like, he covers it up somehow like that, so.
Chapter 2, in which Grace follows Tom's plan and embarks upon physical labor. A beautiful day in Dogville. Grace offers herself 1 hour per household per day. Some are unsure at first, as she is Nicole Kidman and she shouldn't have to be towing apple crates.
Mm-hmm.
She's the most beautiful woman in all of Dogville.
Yes.
An actress. Olivia, a cleaning lady for a cleaning lady. Now that's a funny fact.
Yes.
You're insane, Miss Grace. Grace turns into an alley to knock on Mr. McKay's door. bringing up his blindness, that he is blind to. So, like, the blind leading the blind, we get here. He is a blind man who refuses to acknowledge that he cannot see.
Yeah.
But she does mention to him, like, you notice things about the town, or you have noticed things about the town.
And I would assume as, like a before he started fully going blind, and because he's so insecure about that, he's obsessed with light.
Yeah.
He's obsessed with talking about light, like, oh, on the East Coast, there's this many lumens of light that are given off, and then on the West Coast, these cities have the most light, and so he's trying to, like, even though no one...
deny that he's blind.
Yeah. So it's always a recurring thing with him.
Yes. So Martha's too wordy at the most. People just can't find a need for Grace. And then Grace is looking for work at Maud Ginger's gooseberry bushes. She enters the store. Maud Ginger turns her down, and she is talking with Liz and Gloria. Your hands are surely the most alabaster hands I've ever seen, Daniel Ryan. Mm-hmm. John the Gwagowski.
Yeah.
Well, maybe if you put some aloe on those hands, they'll cure them. I think I'll do just that.
Yeah, she gives that advice to Chloe.
Yeah, and Chloe Sevigny.
And
the character name.
You know, so it's like, okay, and it's like the first, like, positive exchange between her and not Tom.
Yeah, and then Maud Ginger takes some pity on her, like, maybe there's some work that you may be able to do. Like, even though Nicole Kidman's like, I never worked a day in my life, you'll have to teach me, but I'm a quick learner. And she's like, maybe you can tend to the gooseberry bush dirt. Tom does come in at this point and is like, well, maybe we can give her this.
Yeah, like, there's a patch of weeds that sometimes spring up behind the bushes, so maybe you take care of that.
Yeah.
And that would be helpful.
Yeah. So she manages to do that, experiences a hard day's work, and then everyone warms up to her. She cleans for Ben, cares for June and Olivia, listens and talks with Mr. McKay. Martha practices, not on the pedals of the organ, but just by, you know, Nicole Kidman giving out the chords to her.
Yeah, and she, taps her fingers on the cover to
because she's so religious at that point.
Yeah.
And the Hensons just need company, seeing money but not taking it, and Chuck not yet hooked.
Mm-hmm.
So Chuck is the only one that's like, oh, I don't know if I buy you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
For reasons that we do find out. But, yeah.
Tom has prepared a Trojan horse for Chuck. Vera wants to go to a lecture but has no one to watch the kids, and Grace will do just that. Tom feels that he's got game in his mastery of the opposite sex, but he does not.
He does not.
Yeah, he's very incel energy. Vera introduces her children, all named after Greek heroes. Vera cries too easily when it comes to her kids, which we notice.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, I love all 9 of them. I really love them.
Yeah, yeah.
And Grace notices that.
Oh, well, yeah, that'll become important later.
And interesting enough, Patricia Clarkson, who plays, Vera, was cast 4 days before she had to start filming.
Okay, wow.
And we love Patricia Clarkson. She's in a lot of shit. She's in Sharp Objects, which I love her in.
Mm-hmm.
But she's a consummate actress. Jason, one of the children, takes a unique interest in Grace, which we'll get into a little bit later. And you just have to be nice to me. That's all that my mom wants to see, Dan.
Yeah.
Okay, weird sexual kid.
You already, you know where this is going, but yeah.
Chuck arrives in a sour mood. We don't need no help. You can't fool me, Grace. Has Dogfield got you fooled yet?
Yeah, so this is when it kind of, like, where Chuck kind of turns around and he's like, oh no, I wasn't pissed because you're a stranger. I was pissed because you're another person this town is going to ruin. Yeah. Like, I came from the city as well in a previous life, you know, and it ruined me. And it's going to do the same to you, probably.
Yep. And City Boy, you know, trying to give that. And, of course, Nicole Kidman notices that.
Yeah.
But Chuck was a city boy. All people greeting no matter where you go. I remind you of where you came from. Chuck yells at Grace to leave. And Nicole Kidman is said to have communicated very little with the rest of the team, apart from practical issues. However, she did invite the team for champagne and caviar and flew to a Mexican chef to cook for everyone after the filming was over.
Okay.
You know, look, I got the tidbits, Dan. That's all I need to learn. Yeah,
seems like something she would do, yeah.
Chapter 3, in which Grace indulges in a shady piece of provocation. Dan, if only I hadn't indulged in that shady piece of provocation.
Yeah, the other word for our podcast, yeah.
2 weeks pass. Grace has enjoyed herself and is fond of everyone in town. Was true and honest with them all. Grace is listening to Mr. McKay, but indulges herself in a shady piece of provocation.
Yes.
Let's talk about the view. Grace describes her view view from Mr. McKay through his open windows, presumptuous of her, but he gets it. It was kind of like he was hiding from his own issues, and admits to Grace he is blind at that point. Like, oh, you know, if you open up these dark curtains, you must have a great view.
Well, he would have a view of the orchard if the curtains were open, and she kind of just gradually gets him to admit that, yeah, I can't
Which
see.
Which is very presumptuous of her to do, but she does it nonetheless.
Yes.
And assumes that Mr. McKay hates her for doing that. So all the townsfolk show up at the church to vote for Grace's staying. Each one person wants her gone. Well, even if one person wants her gone, she's out.
Yeah, so if she doesn't get 15 votes, then she will leave.
Tom suggests she stay, but Grace agrees to step out and wait at the same time, which is very kind of her. Like, they might not talk truthfully if I'm in their presence, so let them speak. I'll wait in the mine. I'll take my shit.
And then you ring the church bell, you know, when, you know, for each vote for yes. And, you know, if I hear all 15, if I don't hear 15, then I'll just leave automatically.
Over the mountains, inscribed at the entrance to the old mine shaft is the Latin motto, Dictum Ac Factum, which can be translated to no sooner said than done.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I'll think on that.
If they decide to let her go, she will leave without a word. Every ring of the bell will be a vote for Grace to stay. She will wait for 15 bell rings. Tom has left her bread and a map. Several people gifted her tools, a pie, a penknife, clothing, matches, and a hymnal. A dollar bill, in fact. Friends in Dogville, first times that she has felt that she's done good with her life.
It's like a hope spot because
it's good. Everything's going good in Dogville, Dan.
Because seemingly all of these people had snuck these gifts in for her independently of each other. Like, they didn't know that the other one was doing it, but they knew where her bundle of stuff was. So one by one, they must have came by and, like, put a gift in for her independently. And it's like, okay, maybe she's made friends. That's the hope.
Yeah, which is something that we could all expect living in Kenilworth.
Yes.
Maybe I've made friends with the Delisantes.
The listeners will have no idea that they were...
The Tree Crush Dan's house.
That they were sitcom arch rivals of
That
ours.
Was a summer, let me tell you.
That was Hurricane Sandy.
The summer of Gilmore Girls,
Oh, yeah, that was the summer of Gilmore Girls.
It was. A deep time in our
The small
lore.
Comforts,
But a ring for every townsperson. There's a delay on the last bell, but Grace counts 15.
Yes.
And she's welcomed into the community. See, Dan, people can be good.
Well, we'll see, but yeah, for now.
Chapter 4, Happy Times in Dogville. spring and summer arrive. Grace is still doing all of her jobs, even helping Bill win at checkers. Martha even plays a few notes on the organ. Grace will trod the pedals so Martha will have no guilt.
Yes.
Grace convinces Tom's dad that he isn't as sick as he thinks he is. Grace has paid wages and buys one of the china figures in Ma's store.
Yes, she starts making the effort to buy them one by one.
Yeah, we get it. Grace moves into the old mill. You know, thanks to Ben and his freight industry, they get an old mattress.
Yeah, and an old bed frame. Yeah. And they set her up in what used to be, like, the ore pulverizing mill. Which is now just, like, a shack. With, I think, the wheel still left intact in there.
Yeah, we get Liz as Chloe Sevigny saying that she voted for Grace to stay because Grace was far more beautiful than her and will take the lust of the men's eyes off of her.
Yeah.
I don't buy it, Gia. Chloe Sevigny would never want that.
And it's almost like a friend. Like maybe you could interpret this as like, okay, at the very least, you know, Chloe wants another woman her age there to hang out with. Which is nice. But...
And then Grace is now given lead to help Chuck in the orchard.
Yes.
Good old Dogville apple orchard.
The famous apple orchard, yeah.
Martha signals to the town that people are coming. Grace hides in the mine, and for the first time, the law comes to Dogville. Only the mission house here post a missing poster for Grace. Grace is apparently wanted, and her name is Margaret Mulligan. Isn't it our legal duty to respond to the police? Grace suggests all of them vote again. To keep her there, because the law is involved now.
Yes.
So chapter 5, the 4th of July at last, Daniel Ryan. Grace has only two little china figures left to buy. Tom asks Grace for a moment. The blossoms are falling from the ceiling, getting, like, the blossoms scattering on everything. Tom cannot decipher Grace.
Well, before the Tom deciphering scene, there is one of, there's one of the first, Oh God, who's Apple Man?
Stellan Skarsgård?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's
Chuck?
Chuck.
Yeah.
Chuck has a moment
is
where
is that
he...
Chuck? No, Chuck is the one that picks the apples.
Yeah, no, ben, that's no Chuck. Know. No, Chuck all is right. the apple guy. Okay. He comes up to Grace at the 4th of July party and he's like, "Hey, do you want to go pick apples now?" And she's like, "No, we're setting up for the party." And he's like, And then it's the first sign of like
something going wrong.
Something is turning here. Yeah.
So the Blossoms are following. Tom cannot decipher Grace. There's some attraction between us that Tom never really acts on.
Yeah.
It's very mansplaining of him. Like, I'm a man explaining your woman's emotions.
Yes. And that's, he's kind of a wusspuss. And he's like, yeah. You know, philosophically, I think that we have a desire for each other. And she's like, oh, so you saying you love me? And he's like, I get, and it's, in any other setting it might be like a cute exchange, but because we've seen how Tom acts and the position that Grace is in, it is very visibly uncomfortable. It's like, this isn't cute, this is, you know, a little off-putting. So
so at that point everyone, Chuck is smiling, stay as long as you damn please. The phone rings in Ma's shop. Police car is turning up the road. Should I ring the bell? No. Mm-hmm. Martha, don't do it. Another missing poster for Grace, wanted in connection with some bank robbers, and the whole town is like, well, she's dangerous. There's a $5,000 reward if we turn her in.
Yes.
So what should we do, Daniel Ryan?
And they know that there is obviously no way that Grace did that because she's been in, like, Dogville for the past 3 weeks, and, you know, the bank robberies happened, according to the cop, in the past 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. So they know there's no way it's her. They know it's like the mob is kind of setting things up, but then they kind of use this situation to their advantage now.
Yeah. Everything's awkward. All seem to change just a little bit, but not telling the police. Everyone feels a little guilty. Grace wants to leave, but Tom says that she can't. It's more costly for her to live here.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she's got to take care of the people that she was, you know, gave her servitude to. As a good person.
Yeah, and he's like, it's become more dangerous for you to stay here, so therefore we're going to have to, like, change up your work schedule.
It sounds
a little
an awful
bit.
Lot like blackmail, Tom.
Yeah.
Does it? Grace is to work longer hours and pay a visit to everyone twice a day. Quid pro quo. Yeah. Also, your pay will be cut. Grace agrees to things, obviously a little bit weary. Tom, you still have the gangster's phone number, or share it with anyone? Like, remember when, Dan, you got the Little Caesar's phone number?
And Tom's like, I burned it. I burned it 5 minutes later.
You sure about that?
I'm sure. I would never order those pizza puffs, mm-hmm. or pizza cups, whatever the fuck.
Oh, you know what they are.
Yeah. They're cups. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're cups.
They are cups. Yeah. Interesting. You wouldn't order
I've heard
without
of them.
Me,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. I would never dabble in that without your approval, of course.
Interesting. Yeah. Are you saying I'm less entitled to be here? Chuck asks why she doesn't like him. Why can't I touch you? Good girl, God, get out, I have written down here. So, like, when she's teaching the children.
Yeah, because there was a whole thing with where Chuck is like, you know, that's one of those moments that's like, it borderlines on like dark comedy because of how stupid this interaction is. He's like, you know, the apples are it's a sacred time of year. The apples are in bloom. It's important. They're coming in. Yeah. And, you know, how am I supposed to show you about the apples if I can't get right up next to you and try to kiss you?
Mm-hmm.
And Grace is understandably like, the fuck? Yeah. Like, what are you talking
and
about?
And she tried to take the shortcut through Ma Rainey's gooseberry bushes.
Yeah.
And
gets,
you know,
scolded.
She's like, I don't know about that, sweetie. We've been here longer than you.
Yeah.
So then Tom goes to speak to Grace, and Grace is like, we have our whole lives in front of us at this point.
Yeah.
Can we please, like, do something about that? I love you, and I love that you don't demand anything of me, Tom.
Yeah, and Tom is visibly like,
yeah, ooh.
I'd want to demand some stuff, but she, you know, it's, again, the incel vibes, so. Mm-hmm.
I will say in my notes, Quentin Tarantino is a fierce advocate of this polarizing movie.
Okay.
He loves this film.
That makes, I can see that.
He claims if it were a play, it would have won the Pulitzer Prize.
Okay.
And I could see this working on the stage a little bit more, too.
And has that been attempted?
No.
Okay.
Maybe someday from me.
But, yes.
I don't know. Where I play Grace and direct.
And the entire town.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I could do every character. Just give me a one-woman show and a shawl. I could do it. Chapter 6, in which Dogville bares its teeth.
Yeah, wonder what'll happen.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Dan Ryan said, uh-oh. Oops. Grace is teaching Jason, and things get uncomfortable, yes, to say the least. I could be very bad. I need a spanking. And I said, that's Dan Ryan's wet dream right here.
And, you know, the position that Grace has put in is like, you know, this kid Jason is dangerous. Like, he threatens to, like, you know, tip over the baby's cradle that's mm-hmm. in the room unless she spanks him.
The baby Achilles. Yeah.
The baby Achilles. And, you know, so Grace, like, finally has to relent and do it.
Gives him two spanks.
And, you know, almost immediately she is blamed by Vera for, like, abusing her kids.
You should do it harder.
Which is what Jason wants, but obviously, like, this is... You know,
yeah, but before
a fucked
that,
up situation.
Before that, before she's even blamed by, you know, Vera or whoever, Chuck arrives home early and is like, you know, the cops are here.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. That's right.
Yeah.
How could I? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So the cops do show up.
And she asks, Grace asks, what did you tell them, Chuck? Well, I didn't tell them anything, but I may have seen a piece of your clothing down at the mill.
And it could be your monogram scarf,
yeah,
or it could be this hat that Tom misplaced.
Tom wore. Mm.
Which one is it going to be? And then you know what's going to go down.
Yeah.
Because it's horrible.
Yeah. So then he rapes her.
Yes.
And it's very disturbing, and Dan Ryan was clutching his pearls.
And it's one of those things where, I guess symbolically, because, you know, the there aren't any frames around these houses on this set.
Yeah.
So the act,
all the action is occurring,
is
in
visible.
This one house, yeah.
You know, would be visible to everyone on the
but
stage.
But no one else sees it. They're going about their daily business.
Symbolizing that, you know, this is literally happening in like the 15-minute span that the cops are stopping by and that Chuck has her in the house alone and no one is acknowledging that this is going on.
All right, so here we go. In Dogville 2003, Grace Margaret Mulligan, Nicole Kidman, is raped by Chuck, played by Stellan Skarsgård, the father of actor Alexander Skarsgård in the TV series Big Little Lies 2017, where Celeste Wright, Nicole Kidman, is abused by her husband, Perry Wright, played by actor Alexander Skarsgård.
Oh, geez.
And in The Northmen 2022, Alexander Skarsgård plays Amleth, son of Queen Gwyrdin, who is played by Nicole Kidman, who he kills her, and it's just the experience of her being raped by the entire Skarsgård family throughout
Jesus
her entire
Christ.
Film career.
Okay, I didn't, well, I figured we were going to bring up The Northmen at some point, but I completely forgotten about that.
But thanks a lot, Dogville.
Yes.
Yep. Chapter 7, in which Grace finally gets enough of Dogville, leaves the town, and again sees the light of day.
And at this point, we should say that Tom is aware of, like, he pieces together what happened with Chuck, but he is too much of, like, again, a wuss-puss to, like, he's never going to confront Chuck about it, he's never going to take any action about it, because, again, he doesn't really care either, so...
Grace tells Tom the truth of what happened with Chuck. Chuck looks strong, but is not. Tom is going to start looking for a way to get Grace out of Dogville. He says. The summer is ending. The woman in town gossip about her. And Tom, Vera is pissed because Jason told her that Grace hit her. Hit him, sorry. I'm never leaving my children again with you. Maybe you should sleep at night instead of sleeping around with Tom. Just saying. Liz expected more of Grace. Maybe I was flirting. The weather changes in Dogville. Sitting with Mr. McKay with his hand on her leg, like, constantly moving up. Just, like, showing, like, the townsfolk are taking advantage
like
of her.
Like, every male resident, especially, is either getting rapey or handsy, so.
Yep. At last, Grace has acquired all of her figurines. One night, Vera, Liz, and Martha intrude on Grace's home. Vera saw Grace with Chuck in the apple orchard, and
well,
then
Martha
things...
did. Yeah. While strolling, she saw them in the one spot of the apple orchard, behind a pile of debris, and
But things turn violent. Let me teach you about stoicism. And Dan, care to explain this scene that's going on?
Well, Grace tries to reason with Vera. Is like, okay, you remember how happy you were when I taught your kids about stoicism, and it was starting, like, the lesson was starting to sink in. And to that end, in order to punish Grace, Vera has Martha and Chloe restrain her while she takes some of her porcelain figures.
Yeah.
And says, like, well, I'll give you a lesson in stoicism. I'm going to start breaking these, and if you show any emotion, then I will continue breaking these.
Yes.
And from what the narrator tells us, despite having been a person who her entire life has concealed her emotions, Grace does cry. Mm-hmm. Because this is, like... This, like, I think the way that it was explained was, like, the porcelain figures were, like, her covenant with the town.
Yeah.
It was, like, a
sign
that...
Well, no, it's her
that,
belief in, like, innocence. Yeah. And, like, humanity can be good.
Like, this is a sign that, like, things can get better, the people here can be good, etc., and then they're just broken right in front of her. And
us with
that,
Amiibo.
Us with Amiibo. Yeah. And it makes her cry.
Oh my gosh. For the first time since her childhood, Grace does cry, the figurines are smashed, and I said I would have kicked all their asses, Grace.
Yeah.
Whipped around.
You already kind of hate
I did mention, I was like, Dan, what if I smashed every one of your Godzilla figurines? Would our friendship be over? And Dan was like, yes.
Yeah.
Point blank.
I would say so.
Interesting.
Probably.
What if I did in a fugue state and didn't remember?
What if you had soap opera amnesia?
Yeah,
and
what if I didn't remember doing it?
All right, then it would be debatable. Then okay. I might be able to forgive you for that.
You would have to think about it.
If you had some kind of Final Fantasy VII break from reality, then maybe.
All right, if it does occur at some point.
If you got Grimace Shake poisoning, then, yeah, so maybe. Yeah.
Okay. So at that point, Tom says she needs to get out of, Grace tells to Tom, I need to get out of Dogville, but Tom is like, we need a third party. Ben needs money. He needs $10.
Yeah.
Which is an exorbitant fee in this time period. I'm going to borrow $10 from Tom Sr., but yeah. I'm going to give it to you.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And you'll pay,
Tom Sr. back. When you get on your feet.
Yeah, and then you'll give the money to truck driver who will sneak you out of town on his Apple delivery to Georgetown, I think, is the other, or Georgeville, the other place.
So Grace talks with Ben and is late and is screamed at by Olivia, like, Jonathan's not going to shit on the pot himself. Get over there.
Yeah, so everyone
is pissed.
Is getting, like, really, really fucking abusive with her, and again, it's one of those things where even the people you think in town wouldn't get abusive with her, like the disabled girl, even a few times just, like, snaps at because she's learned from everyone else that you can say
do
whatever you
to
want
Grace.
To Grace. So it's.
So Grace tries to smuggle herself in this apple cart, despite
truck
everything going
shipment,
on.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, part of the freight industry, you see, Dan.
But then,
and we get, like, a scrim effect with her, like, sitting horizontal on this apple cart.
Yeah.
Eating apples and falling asleep on this long road.
And she thinks that she has made it to the next town over when Bill sidles into the bed of the truck. And he's like,
yikes.
Well, the cops are blocking, you know, the cops are not blocking. They're parked on the side of the road up ahead. And if this were, like, a real freight business thing, then there would be surcharges, there would be extra security fees, and of course
you could pay me, maybe.
And he starts
raping her,
getting rapey, and
very sad. Dan Ryan was distraught,
and as it turns out, she is still in Dogville.
So they turn around. She wakes up after this whole ordeal. And the entire town is gathered around her, and everyone's pissed. Like, how dare you try and escape? You're trying to wile your way out of your feminine wiles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Bill folded instantly and was like, oh, there was a meeting last night. I admitted to everything.
And what does Tom say?
Tom says nothing.
Oh.
Tom interesting. Is...
Would you defend me?
Well, actually...
Against the entire Burg of Kenilworth?
Well, yeah. But, but Tom specifically blames Grace for stealing... the $10 from his father's
which
medicine
did,
cabinet because she had previously been helping Tom Sr. like measure out medications and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I had to tell them that you stole that money because otherwise I can't secretly help you anymore if I was caught.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So at that point, the town is pissed at her, and then Bill puts his engineering degree, in quotes, to work, mm-hmm. and devises a little system so that Grace cannot escape them again.
Yeah, they fasten a chain to her neck with a bell on it, and then the chain is tied around a giant
wheel,
metal, like iron wheel, which is just long enough for her to sleep in bed, but cannot be pulled over uneven terrain, so she cannot escape the town.
Yeah, so an interesting fact, Kidman was actually being choked by this, but no one believed her, they thought it was just acting.
It tracks with the rest of this, yeah.
So...
yeah.
They said, you go, Nicole Kidman, you act. And she's like, no, it's not.
Well, you can see the red imprint on her neck.
Let me out.
After the fact, so yeah. I had to assume it was
why would she not want to work with Lars von Trier again?
Yeah, it's a mystery, isn't it?
Chapter 8, in which there is a meeting where the truth is told and Tom leaves, only to return later.
Yes.
Tom reveals to Grace how he shifted the blame on her, trash man I have put down,
mm-hmm.
Still asking Tom not to leave her in desperation because, you know, he is the only like life rope she has in this town,
mm-hmm.
despite being a trash man.
Yes.
So, you know, who else does she have to depend on? Grace feels like an animal just going through the motions now. Vera is meaner than ever, that she knows that Chuck has forced himself on Grace. Based on, like, common knowledge, I don't think it's ever, like, discussed.
Yeah.
But she's, like, picked on the fact that
Chuck initiated this, and that, so it was, yeah.
And she won't reveal herself to be wrong in this scenario.
No.
Yeah. So all the men now rape Grace at night, and the children ring the bell every time she
All the men, including Bill, the checkers player, the blind guy, all of them.
And,
yeah.
Fucking Paul Bettany's father.
Yes. Yep. Yeah.
They're all there, and the children ring the bell every time this happens, and it's a horrible town, and Dan Ryan turns to me and goes, oh, this is hard to watch.
Yeah, it is, and there's no real innocent party here, because Martha is, like, acting like she, oh, why are those kids ringing the bell every time something happens? And then Tom...
But she knows.
...strolls past all of the guys who are taking advantage of Grace, and then he cannot confront them or say anything to them, so this is all just, you know... But Tom is seething for, like, a different reason, because he's, you know...
Yeah.
A dumbass.
Yeah,
he's an incel, and he's pissed that she's having sex with them. Yeah. That's what he is upset about. Okay.
So Grace, approaching her one night, Tom says that, like, you know, maybe you should lean towards trusting the townsfolk. We have to show them one last thing.
Yes.
Like, you know, you convince them before, you can convince them again. I'm going to call another town meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you can, like, convince them over to your side.
Yeah.
Which we highly doubt, but sure, whatever. And then Grace will speak to all the town people and confess her truth. She does so, and everybody will silently, like, listen.
Mm-hmm.
At least give her side of the story. It is snowing that night, and Grace doesn't embellish. Grace doesn't think it went very well, and it didn't. All think that Grace is lying.
Yeah.
Because they will not admit that they're wrong or, like, you know, have been doing horrible things to her.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're common citizens. Tom flops, being accused by everyone, and we have to get Grace out. Tom says he has chosen Grace, and he has... Tom goes up to her and is like, I've chosen you, and they have awkward sex. Because he knows, like, their plan has failed that night.
Well, he tries to guilt her into awkward sex.
Well, I think they do have it.
They do? Yeah. Okay,
I think they do.
Well, the way that Tom gets there is like, oh, I just... not really, you know, my town gave me an ultimatum and I picked you,
mm-hmm.
kind of, yeah. So that should mean you should finally give yourself over to me.
And Grace is like, you won't run me into the law or the gangsters. No, I won't do that.
And this is the peak incel thing. He's like, after I did all of that, which is nothing, and all of my plans, which are nothing, have failed, you really owe me, you know, one. So, yeah. Mm.
But we have to get Grace out of this town, Dan. Tom says he has chosen Grace, and like I said, the awkward sex. You can have me if you want. I trust you won't turn me into the law or gangsters. Perhaps you are upset. You don't trust yourself. Tomorrow will bring what it's going to bring, says Grace.
Yeah.
Like, she's at the point of not caring anymore. Tom sinks on his bench to think. He is angry. He has been found out and does what any toxic man would do, and then goes to his desk drawer.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's kept this Pizza Hut phone number,
mm-hmm.
and gives the gangsters a call.
Yes.
The gangsters, Dan.
So, like, then Grace wakes up the next morning. She had not been, like, roused out of her sleep.
Yeah.
As she normally would be by people screaming at her.
And sees that Dogville is oddly quiet.
Yeah.
And everyone in town is giving her leniency. Like, oh, it's fine, Grace.
More specifically, she's been given 2 days off. And then there's, like, there's a moment where Tom tries to be like, well, we could spend your day off together. Because I'm not doing anything.
And she's like, no, I'm just going to bathe and clean myself.
Yeah.
Which Tom would never do.
Yeah.
Or any of his characters in his novels.
So she gets the 2 days off, and then work does resume, but the quiet remains.
And she does do her work, and then we get the iconic line, like Grace said, nobody going to sleep here. That was the Pirate Jenny quote.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's going to sleep here tonight after, like, all that's done here. The town is going to be ravaged and raved.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be the only one left standing.
Yes.
And she doesn't know why she said it.
She instinctively said it.
She felt it in her heart. Like, yeah. I'm going to do this to these people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she does that. And then, like, the night falls at that point. And cars still haven't arrived yet. Like, the cars that have been passing. There's, like, a tree that's fallen on the neighboring road.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone in Dogville's over there watching at least 8 cars come into town.
Mm-hmm.
But no one's come yet. And they say, like, nothing's gonna happen, Grace, go to bed, and she does so.
Mm-hmm.
But then the cars eventually do come in the dead of night.
Yes.
And then we get our last scene in this, chapter 9, in which Dogville receives their long-awaited visit, and the film ends.
Mm-hmm.
Black cars arrive in Dogville. Tom sets forth to make a welcoming committee for these men/mobsters. The men are clearly pissed.
They are. The Dogville people are operating under the assumption that Grace is a fugitive,
mm-hmm.
who is, like, wanted for a bounty by these mobsters. Like, the only description that Grace had given them was, like, oh, I saw the top guy's face,
yeah.
and they want me, you know, they'll want me dead for that, in very vague language. But when the gangsters are brought to see the state that Grace is in, you know, chained to the wheel in her bed, clearly abused and starved, most likely.
Mm-hmm.
They are pissed. Like, who the fuck did this?
And Bill goes to, like, whatever his name is, raise your hand.
Like, well, I tried to design the chain to be comfortable, and then they have him, like, cut her out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we, you know, the vibe shifts.
Yeah.
Here.
What is she wearing? They cut the collar off of Grace. They have guns. Grace knows who's in the car. Her father, James Caan, is revealed.
Yeah.
And early in the film, she's like, you know, my father, they took him away from me.
Yeah.
So we don't know exactly if
in very vague language, like, they took my father. Yeah.
If he's the vague leader of this mafioso. But
yeah.
He in turn it turns out to be this.
He's the big boss. He is the big man.
And
yeah.
then at this point, I have to mention the cast includes 1 Oscar winner, Nicole Kidman, and 5 Oscar nominees, James Caan, Lauren Bacall, Patricia Clarkson, Sir John Hunt, and Chloe Sevigny.
Yeah.
Interesting. Do they turn the party, Dan? Do you think they do a good job with, like, their acting prowess in this?
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah.
So Grace is sent into the car to discuss things with her father. He isn't mad at her, wanting to reconcile, all about morality, arrogance, comparison to dogs, fitting, like, you know, the way you treat people.
And for, like, town. some establishment from before the story, he did shoot at her in anger, but he admits that that was wrong, and he was just, like, pissed that she called him, I think, arrogant was the thing.
Yeah.
'Cause, and now he's like, oh, like, you didn't let me finish. You didn't let me get any insults back, so then I had to find you so that we could finish this conversation.
Yeah. And then Grace is supposed to act as her namesake, and her father's pissed at that. Like, why would you show human beings mercy?
Like, yes.
Like, why are you holier than thou? You would have upheld someone to a higher standard than these people.
But he does frame it in his own way in, like, a loving father kind of, like you've given... You gave these people more of a break than you would ever give yourself. Like, you would punish yourself tenfold if you had done anything like what happened here. So why not, like, why are you depriving people of justice?
Mm-hmm.
When
Which
you
she
would
was
not...
teaching the children about earlier in the film. Justice!
So, like, why would you, you know... You have to approach the world with your own standards intact.
Grace would be the Arceus owner.
Yes,
in
she
Pokemon
would.
Universe.
Yeah. Well, Nicole Kidman would anyway, but
So Grace is given some time to think about the power she now yields, thanks to her father.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I'm going to give you a few minutes to decide on this decision. Should we wipe Dogville off the map or not?
And the people of Dogville are scared as fuck.
They're concerned. They're looking through their windows. And Who would make Grace decide whether to wipe Dogville off the map, Dan?
It's Tom.
Yeah.
And Tom is like, you know, it's okay to be scared, right? Like, you know, I'm scared. Is that, you know, that makes sense?
Yeah.
You know, because maybe I did some things wrong, yeah. But, you know, and that's kind of the last straw that yeah. Grace needs
to decide.
So after
this point of talking to Tom/Dan, Grace knows that the answer is much like Jenny. She returns to her father and succumbs to the responsibility of power. I want to make this world a little better, so I'm going to wipe this town off the map. Tom wants to talk with Grace. He apologizes. We get some crocodile tears.
Mm-hmm.
Not now. Doesn't fit you. And if there's any town in the world that we'd be better without, it's Dogville. So kill them all.
Yeah.
You know, as each head is lopped off, I'll say, hoopla!
And originally, the big boss isn't even going to, he's like, oh, okay, so standard procedure would be we kill that dog and nail it to a telephone pole or something.
Just give them a warning, yeah.
You know, but then Grace is like, nah, like, that's not equal justice for this place.
And she gives the line, there's a family with kids, do the kids first and make the mother watch. Tell her, you will stop if she holds back the tears to demonstrate stoicism.
Yep.
And I know that she has trouble with her kids. She loves to cry a lot when they're involved.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's the Jonathan rule. Dan watch.
They raise the blinds on the car, and we see that
we should open the curtains.
It's in frame. It's in flames.
Mm.
The gangsters are just shooting everyone.
Yep. So they raise the curtains. They had it coming. Grace watches and weeps, but doesn't prevent herself from seeing.
Yeah.
She watches everyone die in this town. Vera fails in showing stoicism. All her kids and everyone is slaughtered.
Including the baby, yeah. Yep.
And in the aftermath, Tom is shot personally by Grace.
Yes.
You know, brought out of the car, she takes a gun and goes, I'm sorry, Tom. Shoots him in the head.
And then goes to her father. Is like, some things you have to do yourself.
Yep.
And her father seems pleased with that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're going to have to explain that to me on the ride home, yep. But, you know, you did what you did.
So they're leaving town, and all they hear is Moses the dog barking.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, oh, Moses. You know, he's just barking because he's scared. He didn't do anything wrong to me. He just wants his bone. Leave him, and someone else will surely discover him because the town is on fire.
Yeah.
Yep. And then we get Moses turning from a chalk drawing into a real dog.
Mm-hmm.
That's the end of Dogville, honey.
Yeah.
Daniel Ryan, final thoughts on the film. Why did I show it to you? But to torture you for 3 hours. Finishing a little later than usual, but we're still here.
It is a very intense film.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously... It generated controversy. I can see why it did. I am going to try to look into more reasons why.
Yeah.
Probably one of the darker things we've done on here again.
And as I said, the darkest thing I'll do on this podcast in the foreseeable future.
But still probably not the darkest movie we've ever seen, certainly.
Yeah, Gods of Egypt last week, definitely.
Yeah. But it
triumphed over this.
It is intense, and there is, like... you know, emotional, I guess, catharsis at the end, but you don't feel good about it. It's just kind of like, this, the world sucks, like, this is what it is.
Is this a good movie, Dan?
I'd say so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You get
it. I would say that this is, it's unique, it's like a, I don't know, it really does make you angry, I would say. For me, it did. and I think if it inspires that, then... I'm going to remember it.
Mm.
Even when I saw, like, the ending scene last time, when I walked in on you finishing it,
yeah.
I, you know, that still stuck with me, because it's like, oh, Nicole Kidman's like, oh, she's actually a mob princess in this one, and it's
mm-hmm.
it is a very well-done turn at the end, and feels like a payoff, but again, it's like a monstrous payoff, so you don't want to enjoy what happens, but it's like, for the story, this is how it goes. So
yeah.
it's I don't know, it is a recommendation, but be in the right headspace for it.
Yeah, I love this movie. It's very Brechtian in its qualities. It's theatrical. It called out Dan Ryan on many things.
Mm-hmm.
I know he'll be staying up thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
The Dark Jonathan arc has finally achieved its full purpose, but not over yet. There are still more things before the purging of Jonathan Krakowski occurs.
Mm-hmm.
Just know that this is what I want the effect to be the entire time.
Ideally,
and it has never occurred yet. You know, the last unicorn didn't deter him
well,
at all. You know,
wow.
I tried my darndest, but it didn't get there.
No.
Yeah. When we have the Dark Dan arc, I hope I'm up against the wall.
Well, we were gonna have a
Billy Piper style with knives through my hands. Ryan, I touched him. I liked it.
Yeah, pinned up like Lilith. Yeah. But we have a slight Dark to Dan arc coming soon.
Dark
but it's not
Dark to Dan arc.
Dark to Dan arc. But it's not going to be any. This is probably as intense as Will. Yeah. But yeah.
All right, Dan. So with that, before you give us a little tease of what's happening next week.
But just I'm not satisfied.
You're
just
not done yet.
I'm not satisfied. So we watched this on a German Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And since, you know, you explained in your trivia fact that this is, you know, it's made some lists in the intervening years. Mm-hmm. It's praised, like, mostly positive, like, as a critical thing.
Yeah.
Usually even the director being an asshole doesn't deter those critical things from happening. So why is it just relegated to, like, that German copy instead of, you know, was it that...
I want to know.
You know,
that's polarizing, all that's released currently. You know, I think some people were offended by it and its anti-American sentiment.
Okay.
I can't really tell you. It's that dark to be had. The Criterion Collection hasn't brought it to us again.
But it's not even out of the realm for Criterion.
No, because they've done other Lars von Trier movies.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Okay, so then that'll be some independent research, perhaps, but I don't know, it's very fascinating that's the state of where it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, now I'm finished.
Well,
yeah.
Where could our audience find us on social media, Dan?
You can follow me on Instagram, X, and Threads as King_Danis, and someday I will properly set up the Danendorf Tumblr to get more artwork on there, because I do have some art in the holster, working on some past prompts for Jonathan. But that's all for me. How about you?
You can find me, Jonathan Kwiatkowski, at Losing My Mind JK on Instagram, Drink and Read JK on Twitter, and my other podcasts, including Nightcaps of the Theater and Drink and Read the Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But Dan Ryan, what are we doing next week? I don't know. I'm on the verge of a nervous breakdown.
No nervous breakdowns, I hope.
Oh,
but
okay.
In a rather neat sense, before we take a 1 week break for Easter,
yes.
It is a perfect amount of time to wrap up the first half of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Stardust
as
Crusaders.
I figured, yes.
You know, we have obviously dealt with a number of enemy stand users at this point, all themed after the, you know, tarot cards. And there's still a few more left. We will be skipping one or two as we make our way into the final four of this stretch. But all I can say is get ready to maybe meet some old friends for the first time yet again.
Oh.
And maybe practice scuba diving.
Hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe focus on a submarine that isn't a sandwich for once. Goodbye, one and all.
I'm agog. I'm aghast. Dan Ryan really called me out on the Dogville podcast. Interesting.
Woof.
What's better than a bad movie? Well, sometimes a good movie, of course. And here on Good Movie Podcast, Dan, Jonathan, and maybe even a couple of guests talk about the movies that made them. Think of this as a once-in-a-while, more casual discussion on the details and nuances of films we love. And more of an after-movie chat with Nicole Kidman in the AMC ad. That's the kind of vibe we're going for here. As always, the Anime Was Not a Mistake family appreciates the loyal listeners like you. Thank you. If you want to join the conversation, feel free to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Anime Was Not a Mistake or our personal social media accounts that we mention at the end of the episode. With that, we'll let the music play us out. Thanks as always, and remember to ask yourself, what makes a good movie good?